City folk have been urban homesteading for a long, long time. But then one day, the Gervais family of Pasadena came up with a trademark for urban homesteading, and now they will not allow anyone else to play. This leads us to ask, should one be able to trademark a common activity like urban homesteading?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 721st edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Luzon who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Good morning.
Folks, many of us who live in the city like to grow our own food, and given the chaos and uncertainty of the modern food chain, taking care to feed oneself and one's family is becoming an ever more popular activity. A few decades ago, the term urban homesteading was coined for this activity. Thus, when one hears the term urban homesteading, one understands that someone is going back to the land in the city. Few have been more active at urban homesteading than the Gervais family of Pasadena, California, who have turned their suburban home and grounds into the Path to Freedom Urban Homestead, where they generate income by giving tours, filming, and selling their organic produce. Many others around the nation have also become urban homesteaders, and some, like Kay Ruby Bloom, have started their own urban homesteading enterprises, like Ruby's Urban Homesteading Institute. But then, when their Path to Freedom Urban Homestead became very popular, the Gervais trademarked the term urban homestead and began attacking with cease and desist letters to authors, bloggers, farmers, internet service providers, librarians, and others who use, carry, or display the term urban homestead. The Gervais battle to protect their newly won intellectual property has been met with a counteroffensive by those who have been using the term for their own. Facebook pages and Twitter tweets ask the family to, well, take a hike. This internecine warfare leads us to ask, should one be able to trademark a common activity like urban homesteading? Well, here to help us find some answers, we have Kay Ruby Bloom, who is director of the Institute of Urban Homesteading up in Oakland, California. Ruby, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you.
Good to have you aboard. Quickly, what is the Institute of Urban Homesteading?
The Institute of Urban Homesteading is a small local educational project that offers short classes for busy urban people on how to become more sustainable in their own homes and communities.
So it's kind of just exactly what it says then, right?
Absolutely. We teach everything from beekeeping to canning to cheese making to gray water system building and everything you would need or everything that people are already doing. We go out and try to find someone to teach it, and it's a little homegrown operation.
Good for you. And we always ask, who pays the way? You get a grant from Monsanto for this?
The Institute is a nonprofit, and we support ourselves entirely through tuition.
Okay.
So we bridge the gap between trying to be really affordable, and we are unsupported. We have no grants. We just do it with what people pay us to teach.
So people pay to learn, then?
They do. They do. And we still try to keep it very affordable and also pay teachers a decent wage.
Good for you. Also with us today, Patrick T. Riley, intellectual property attorney. So that's a nice German name. Up against the microphone there.
Up against the microphone.
There you go. Now we can hear you. Welcome to the Food Chain, Patrick. Glad to have you aboard. Institute of Urban Homes. Patrick, what is intellectual property, by the way?
Well, intellectual property is anything that can be defined by law first that someone owns that relates to a patent, a copyright, a trademark, a trade secret, or another odd category, trade dress, which we won't have time for today.
Trade dress. Okay. So that would be how people actually dress then. Ruby, how are you dressed? No kid, never mind. So, Patrick, who pays your way?
The IP Society is a pro bono effort on my part.
Okay.
What I do for a living is I'm an intellectual property attorney.
Okay, what's the IP Society then?
It's a place for people to learn and discuss intellectual property issues.
Oh,
which,
good.
As you know, are becoming more and more important to every person's life.
Every person, yeah. Amen to that. Especially with the internet, right? I mean, it's really bringing a flood of new intellectual property into the world.
Yeah, exactly. For small businesses like Ruby's nonprofit, mm-hmm. even a small educational nonprofit is directly impacted by the rules and regulations of intellectual property.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ruby, let's start with you. What the heck is urban homesteading?
Well, urban homesteading is a movement. And in your tagline at the beginning, you said it was coined 2 decades ago. I would go further than that. I would say 4 decades ago. Because of this has all gone down, we've done a lot of research, and it showed up in Mother Earth News in the mid-70s.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, in the current use that it's in now the term has been used since the turn of the 20th century, with other usages. And that bears, that is important when you're talking about intellectual property.
Right. So demonstrating that it's been around for a long time.
It has been around for a while.
But what exactly is it?
It is the practice of well, what is it? I think people see it as...
I mean, this for people who...
Yeah, I'm trying to come up with a good definition. I'm thinking of... It made Wikipedia after this whole thing, and I'm trying to think what it says. I think it's people who want to live more sustainably in the city and be more self-reliant, grow some of their food, pay more attention to their resources, have a smaller footprint. So it's sort of a practical side of the environmental movement.
Mm-hmm. So when my grandparents homesteaded in Montana, they got 160 acres.
That's something different.
Okay.
Okay, so we differentiate ourselves from the original homesteading movement, which, and I talk about this sometimes because the original homesteading movement, of course, was a thievery when we took, what we considered as the new American public, what we thought was open land that didn't belong to anyone, and we sat on it and claimed it for our own. Urban homesteading is more about reclaiming land in the city that's unused to feed the people.
And there's a lot of land unused in the city. Do you have any idea about the extent of urban homesteading? I mean, has anybody done a survey and found out how many urban homesteaders there are running around?
Well,
or hunkered down?
I have no idea. I think what you can look at is that there was some fact that came from the government like 2 years ago. It was 13% up how many people were doing their own food growing. So there, I don't know where those studies are, but there is some information on that. But, how many people consider themselves urban homesteaders? Maybe that would be the work of some census taker. I don't know.
Or maybe a sociologist from college with a government grant.
But there are statistics about people increased numbers of gardeners and people keeping animals for food and fertilizer.
Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. And given what's going on in the world today, the food riots that are currently going on throughout the world because of the ever-escalating price of food, it seems to make a little bit of sense that we learn how to take care of ourselves here in the city, right?
Absolutely. And even more, people are frustrated about what's going on with the environment, and they want to do what they can to do their little part. Of course, really, it's when you're faced with big corporations, it's not going to be enough, but it's still something. It does no harm. So I think people are wanting to take back control of their use of resources mm-hmm. and their self-reliance. And, people are also really attracted to relearning some of the heirloom skills that were lost through a convenience capitalism, as I call it, mm-hmm. or convenience consumerism. So people really want to start doing for themselves again.
And getting a little good food to boot in the whole
process. Absolutely. We eat pretty good around here.
Well, where is around here, by the way?
So the school is based in Oakland, California.
Mm-hmm.
And
that qualifies as urban.
Where I am, it personally, is very urban. And our students are sort of from the whole greater Bay Area. But the school is located in Oakland and...
So, Ruby, you're coming out with a book related to this whole subject, right?
Yep. It's a book I co-authored with a woman named Rachel Taplin, who's up in Petaluma, and it's called Urban Homesteading, Heirloom Skills for Sustainable Living.
Okay. And all was going well with Ruby's Institute of Urban Homesteading until what?
I had heard rumblings of this. I had actually...
Until rumblings.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's hold that. Let's hold that because we have to take a quick break.
Okay.
And when we come back, we're going to talk about what happened when you got a letter from the good Gervais family of Pasadena, California.
Okay.
Telling you to knock it off. That's my word. You can't use it anymore. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. Today we're on The Food Chain. We're talking about the trademarking of a term, the term for a common activity called urban homesteading. And we're trying to figure out if this makes any sense. We have K. Ruby Bloom, director of the Institute of Urban Homesteading, Patrick J. Riley, intellectual property attorney, and what's your name, your nonprofit?
Intellectual Property Society.
Right back. Do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Welcome back out there. This is The Food Chain. I am Michael Olson. Today we're talking trademarking, a very common practice known as urban homesteading, with K. Ruby Bloom, director of the Institute of Urban Homesteading, and T. Patrick Riley, intellectual property attorney with the Intellectual Property Society. And, of course, we're talking with you as well. Curious to know what you think about this issue as we go along. So tune in and listen to what happened to Ruby when she got a letter from the Gervais family. Ruby, what on earth did this letter say?
Go ahead.
Go ahead. What did the letter say?
People commonly say it was a cease and desist letter, but it was not. It was an informational letter. It did have some of the qualities of a cease and desist letter. It basically informed me of the terms that had been trademarked. It informed me
What terms have been trademarked?
Urban homestead and urban homesteading.
Mm-hmm.
It told me how to properly cite the Gervais family when using their copyrighted material, which, you know, came as a surprise to me. I had never even heard of them, so I hadn't had used any of their material any time in the past or in the future.
So out of the blue...
Let me make one more point.
Okay.
And then it told me, also, it cited my school and several websites, the one from my book, the Facebook page, and said, also, if I were using the terms, I should stop using them and instead use more generic terms. And they suggested modern homesteading as being more generic than urban homesteading, which I would, gander something different, but that's what the letter said.
Mm-hmm. Now, we understand that the Gervais sent these letters all over to libraries, to internet service providers, and even to Facebook. They took down some Facebook pages, evidently, that were using the term urban homesteading.
Yeah, so this is a really complex issue because we're dealing with some books, which would be more of a copyright
mm-hmm.
issue. We're dealing with Facebook, in which case they used the Digital Millennium Copyright Act to challenge something that was trademarked, not copyrighted. And then we're also dealing with businesses who have been in operation for a while that use the name.
So like yours?
Like mine.
Mm-hmm.
And
so essentially, the Gervais family thought, well, we can get a leg up on the world if we just take over this word. And so they sent everybody letters?
Well, we don't want to assume what they were thinking.
Okay, that's
because
good.
Because we don't want to misrepresent them, right?
That's correct. That's right. Incidentally, Ruby, we asked them 3 times to join us today, and they didn't. So
I would have enjoyed that. I bear them no malice, personally.
Uh-huh.
I think that they're probably doing their best. I mean, they say they were trying to protect it from big corporations, and I say, well, if it's so ubiquitous that it's a movement, which it really is, we don't need to protect it from corporations because they won't be able to trademark it either. So I think that they're, you know, that's what they say. That's their stated reason on the website, was to protect their work from big corporations. Now, what's interesting is the only people they sent letters to are tiny operations like ours.
You mean they didn't send a letter to Monsanto?
No.
Oh.
They did send some to some publishers, which were bigger operations.
Mm-hmm.
They sent them to some bloggers. They say they didn't. They were bloggers. They sent them to anyone in the first 50 Google hits that they perceived to be making money from the terms.
Uh-huh.
So some of these were bloggers who maybe had a side business selling some products or, at any rate, this is what happened. There were 16 letters that we know about.
And now if you look at, if you Google urban homesteading, they own the term, right? They're there.
Well, supposedly they
chased
do.
Everybody
supposedly
else.
They do. And there are some specifics. The term urban homesteading is registered in the supplemental registry of the trademarking. And our IP lawyer over there, you can probably speak to this better than I can, but my understanding is, one, it's in the supplemental registry, and so it doesn't have the same rights as other terms that might be trademarked. And the other thing is, it's actually a service mark, not a trademark. And
okay.
I don't have a big understanding of the laws, but I think that also affects how they're allowed to use it and what their rights are in terms of telling other people not to use it.
Well, Patrick, what questions would you ask Ruby now?
First of all, I appreciate the way she's presented her position without implying that she understands what is in the mind of the Gervais Institute. Secondly, I would say that her point about the supplemental register is dead on, that a service mark in the supplemental register is really just a way that the government allows a party to put others on notice that you're using a term or a design as though it were a trademark.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not actually an actionable registered trademark with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. It's more just an on-notice statement.
And can you correct me if I'm wrong? The supplemental registry is for marks that are descriptive, not distinctive, which is exactly what we're talking about, a term that describes an activity.
That's one of the reasons to put a mark on the supplemental registry.
Okay.
You can't get over, if you can't get over the barriers of being a non-descriptive or non-generic mark, you will sometimes be put on, be given authority, permission to go on the supplemental registry. Yes.
Which tells us something about their process in trying to get this registered.
You know what I heard that was interesting in when you read what they said in their letter. What I heard you say was that they have a trademark, and that you must quit using their copyrighted material without attribution. So that's kind of a shift right there. We have this name trademark, and then on the other hand, the stuff over here that we write, you can't use that without attribution. Well, it's not really saying anything.
I think that they perhaps didn't really understand the difference, or they're lumping a lot of things together.
Well, this is Pat. I don't know that we know what the reasoning was, as you pointed out before, but
yeah.
I can say there are a lot of parties that are misusing the Digital Millennium Copyright Act,
yeah.
in which they're trying to assert trademark rights improperly through assertions of copyright infringement. Furthermore, misusing the act like this can make the asserting party, the person who's misusing the act, liable for attorney's fees for the defendant.
Oh.
From the defendant's fees.
How does that work? So Ruby's got 13 attorneys hired here.
I don't.
You don't? Okay.
Could be quite a problem once you start sending out letters that are based on bad law.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I think there was also, just to throw one other issue in the mix that makes it really interesting, is that, so they used the Digital Millennium Copyright Act to have these Facebook pages taken down, and Facebook did it, and when we wrote to Facebook and said we haven't infringed on anyone's copyrighted material, Facebook said, basically, you are guilty until proven innocent. You need to get an affidavit from the complainant that says it's okay for us to put your pages back up. And they had nothing in place to actually deal with a trademark issue.
And that's the core problem with the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. It's a way for someone who's having their copyright infringed to inform an ISP, that an internet service provider, that they are participating in an infringement of copyright. So the DMCA, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, gives the internet service provider an out. It says, if you take it down, we'll hold you harmless. It's black letter law, we call it.
Uh-huh.
So the temptation is to, well, gosh, we got this letter. We don't want to spend any money dealing with this. Let's just take it down.
Easiest out. Ruby, we're going to have to take a break. Can you stick with us a while longer?
I can stay with you until quarter till, and then I need to go teach gardening.
Okay. We'll keep you till a quarter till then, because
okay.
We can. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. We have with us Kay Ruby Bloom, who's the director of Institute of Urban Homesteading. We have T. Patrick Riley, intellectual property attorney with the Intellectual Property Society. And, of course, we have you. Curious to know what you think about this issue. Do you think one should be able to trademark a common activity like urban homesteading? What do you think? 831-479-1080 and 800-624-2665 for those of you calling throughout the land. We will be right back. Please do stay tuned. Well, imagine yourself an urban homesteader and you have an urban homestead business selling urban homestead tools or fertilizers or something like that. And all of a sudden you get a letter that says, hey, I own that term. And furthermore, you can't talk about the things that I talk about unless you quote me and attribute what I'm saying to me. And all of a sudden, and furthermore, you have to remove your Facebook page, and your Facebook page has already been removed without you even thinking about it. So you find yourself under attack. What on earth do you do? You hire an attorney? Well, what did you do, Ruby?
The first thing I did was try to get information. I reached out to my community of students and supporters and tried to get some advice.
Did anybody have any idea what was going on? I mean, if you ask people who are taking gardening lessons, hey, I'm under attack. What do I do?
Did anybody, I don't think I understand the question.
Well, did any of your gardening students know how to answer your question?
Well, you know, lots of people know attorneys, and people were shocked and angry. Completely independently of me, my school, I mean, there are a lot of other people affected as well. Someone on Facebook started a Take Back the Urban Homesteadings, and you know, people were pretty outraged. So the people that I had contact with were baffled. And then those people who did have contact with lawyers or know someone quickly gave me people to contact. And through the course of about a week, I learned a lot about the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, about the Supplemental Registry and the Principal Registry of Trademarking. And so, you know, with a big community, it turns out we did have a lot of information.
And there it is. That's one of the things that's nice about community.
Absolutely.
Did she do the right thing, Patrick Riley?
Well, of course, but I can't help but suggest that you get individual legal representation because every case is unique.
Of course, I haven't finished the story, but go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
One thing I will say is I did get advice from several lawyers on how to write a letter to respond, and I did do that. I wrote a letter. Other people affected also wrote letters. I think maybe theirs were from actual lawyers and perhaps a bit more professional, but I think my letter was good and fair and maybe a bit gentle because that's how I am. And so far, no one, neither my organization nor anyone else, has received a response to our response letters. And then some of the other people involved, someone is filing a petition to cancel one of the marks. Someone does have representation by a lawyer who's not revealed their strategy. And I'm also in contact with a lawyer who's on paternity leave, and we're not official yet, so I can't say more about that.
So you're taking means and have some legal help, and you're going to try to have that term removed from the register?
So I can't tell you what I'm going to do because my legal representation is not official. I can tell you that other people affected, one group is filing a petition to cancel, and the other has legal representation, but they've not revealed their strategy. And really, I have to say this way because I don't want to misrepresent myself or anyone else when it comes to, you know, legal stuff is sensitive.
Sure.
Yeah.
But Patrick, everybody's walking on eggshells when it comes to...
Well, I can tell you the Electronic Frontier Foundation is not walking on eggshells. They've gotten involved. They're representing three clients, Kelly Cohn, Eric Knudsen, and Process Media. This is all public knowledge.
Yes, it is. They have, however, not really revealed what they're going to do. They're still in negotiations, is my understanding.
And who are they negotiating with, the DeVays family?
Well, what I know is I have a copy of the letter the Electronic Frontier Foundation sent to the DeVays family, which the Electronic Frontier Foundation posted on their website, which is EFF.org. And so that's why I'm aware of this.
Sure. So we can talk about this then. So the Electronic
Frontier Foundation
sent the... What did they say in the letter?
Well, in summary, they point out that the term urban homesteading has been adopted and widely used since the 70s, referring to strategies undertaken to revitalize blighted urban areas, I'm quoting now, as well as projects that promote and model various forms of urban farming. So it's taken on mainstream parlance. It's used by leading newspapers and bloggers, meetup groups, and nonprofits. So they go on to say that, therefore, urban homesteading is a term that has to be used in by normal commercial speakers, which is a defense against trademark infringement.
Right.
You can't impoverish the language in the assertion of your trademark. So that's their first point. There's two more points. Next is they pointed out that as far as making it a copyright assertion, there were books printed prior to the DeVays family use of the term, which used the term. So you can't copyright something unless you're the original author of it. And they're clearly not the original author. And lastly, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act is totally inappropriate for this dispute because it's about a trademark assertion.
Sure.
It has nothing to do with the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, and there's a possibility of liability for attorney's fees on the part of the defendants, as I mentioned previously.
And you better be careful because we can come and get you then.
Well, don't start a fight. You're not willing to win.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, good. So, Ruby, we have a couple minutes left with you.
Uh-huh.
Where do you go from? I see where you're still the Institute of Urban Homesteading. You haven't backed down. You haven't given in. You're standing up to this.
Well, in my letter that I wrote to them, I asked them for some more information. And I also pointed out that the letter they sent to me was very generous in a way. It said, you know, we're going to work this out and we're going to figure something out. We don't need to use legal counsel. It had a lot of very soft language. And so my response was the same. Well, okay, you know, you're saying we can work this out. Well, okay, well, let's, you know, I don't think you're going to win a legal case, but let's try to work this out. And, of course, they haven't responded to me. So I'm not going to change anything until I have to. And should they actually get a lawyer, the letter I received was not from a lawyer. Should I receive a letter from a lawyer, by that time I will have secured some legal representation and we'll figure out together what the proper road forward is. I would fight it if I had to. And at the same time, you know, this is not my work that I was put on the earth to do, is fight trademarks. The work I was put here to do is...
But maybe it is the work that you were put here to do. I mean, if you can stand up to this here, you know, because it seems like you're not the only one that's going through this, right, Patrick?
Oh, yeah, there's been many letters sent out.
Yeah.
On many, for many different terms, right?
Mm-hmm.
For many different, not just on urban agriculture or urban homesteading, but many other terms.
So here's one of the things that has stopped me from, like, immediately going out and taking action is that I know that there's some other petitions and cases on board, and until I have a lawyer who will talk to these lawyers and find out if it makes sense to work together or if it cancels it out if we also start an action. So, if you have some information on that, you could tell us. You know, does it make sense to have multiple cases going at once? And I haven't had the answer to that. Uh-huh. So when I do have the answer to it, you know, I'll know better how to move forward.
Do you have an answer, Patrick?
I would say if the trademark gets canceled, then the dispute evaporates. That's the first point.
There you go. 831-479-1080. Ruby, thank you for joining us.
Thank you
Patrick,
so much.
We'll be right back. This is The Food Chain. 479-1080, 800-624-2665. Well, folks, city urban homesteading has been around for decades. But then one day, the Gervais family of Pasadena, California, came up with a trademark, and now they're sending letters to people and suggesting that they don't want anybody else to play in urban homesteading. And so this leads us to ask, should one be able to trademark a common activity like urban homesteading? With us today, we have Patrick Riley, who's an intellectual property attorney with the Intellectual Property Society. Can people learn about this on the Intellectual Property Society website?
Yes, I put up video blogs on topics like this.
Really? What's the email? What's the website?
IPsociety.net.
IP Society. Well, Patrick, we don't know what the motive for the DeVais family is, but I have motives, okay? I've decided to get into the lawn bowling business. I'm going to set up a lawn bowling supply store on the internet, and I'm going to copyright or trademark lawn bowling. All right. I mean, if they can trademark urban homesteading, then I can trademark lawn bowling. And my real motive here, of course, is to get at the top of the search engine lists. And I'm going to do that by going. I'm going to get my trademark for lawn bowling, and I'm going to find all of those other people who are in my business, and I'm going to send them letters, nicely worded letters, to get off my turf. I have a trademark on lawn bowling, and therefore, if they want to participate in the lawn bowling business, they're going to have to call themselves grass groupers or something like that. And thus, when people look for lawn bowling information, there I'll be. Can I get away with this?
I guess it's physically possible to get away with it. You shouldn't get away with it, and you probably won't.
Why not? What's the difference between urban homesteading and lawn bowling?
Let's just talk about lawn bowling.
All right.
If you were to get a supplemental registration on the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office's supplemental register for lawn bowling, and then you sent out notices under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act of takedown requirements, that would be a misuse of the law. But it is being done. People do things like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's in fact fairly common, but it's not properly applied law.
So if somebody were to get one of my letters, you know, threatening in a nice way the fact that I have the copyright on lawn bowling, they should just write me back and say, take a hike, Olson.
Well, they should respond. You should always show responsiveness to the court. But they should also point out that if you cost me any attorney's fees, you're going to be paying them.
Okay, good. There you go. Let's go to the phones, folks. Today, the phone numbers today, if you have any questions about intellectual property, pick up your phones and join us. We're at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Teresa?
Yes, hi, Michael.
Hi, welcome to The Food Chain.
Thank you. This is Teresa Caraggio.
Well, welcome aboard.
I wanted to say that I think that intellectual property is the last frontier. It's the colonization of the mind. And that I think there's a real parallel to what Monsanto is doing with seeds. It's like the patenting of life forms. that we always say that words have a life of their own, and that this is trying to say, I want a monopoly. I don't want to just, you know, have this as my property when I'm using it, but I want to have a monopoly so that no one else can use it. And that's why I think that intellectual property is such a dangerous thing.
Patrick?
I think intellectual property is too important to be left to the lawyers. I think the public has to get involved, and they have to help the legislature define intellectual property rights so that these rights benefit society.
Well, you know, I have some intellectual property, and I would like to protect it. Not just my lawn bowling company, but, you know, I have a couple books out there. The books have titles. The books have information in them. And I want to protect that. Is there something wrong with that?
I don't think so. I think that that's very specific. That's a very specific use. And that there are ways to show that you need to have, like, a lot of words in a row, you know, before you're copying something from Michael Olson. But other things that are covered under intellectual property, if our great-great-great-great-grandparents had had that idea about recipes or phrases or ways of doing things, none of us would be alive today.
Well, wait, I'm not sure about that.
Well, we wouldn't be living very well. I mean, if you think about all the things that we use, that somebody sometime invented.
Do you think they should be? Do you think one should be able to patent a common activity like urban homesteading or lawn bowling?
Absolutely not. I also don't think that they should be able to patent things like the pharmaceutical companies do in free trade agreements. That if we were to change intellectual property rights and take that out of free trade agreements, we could end. We could either donate billions and billions of dollars to pharmaceutical companies, or we could just let third world countries manufacture the cures to the diseases that they have, that there's no money, you know, in it for the cure.
Okay, can you hang in there, Teresa? We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to go back to Patrick, who's ready to throw his pen at me. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking intellectual property, and the notion of whether one should be able to patent or trademark and protect common activities like urban homesteading or lawn bowling. What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Patrick Riley, Intellectual Property Society. So what's the name of the website again?
IPsociety.net.
I'm going to have to go check this out, see if I can protect myself. How about you out there? Are you ready to protect what you have that's intellectual and it's property? Right back. Well, we're back. So much to talk about in so little time. We have Teresa on the line, who made an interesting comment, and we have Patrick Riley, attorney, who's going to respond. Patrick, what do you have to say to Teresa?
Well, first, in spirit, I agree with Teresa that the purpose of intellectual property is the function just to benefit society. In fact, it's the only civil rights mentioned in the body of the Constitution. It's Article 1, Section 8, says that Congress has the right to endow for a limited time, limited monopoly rights, in order to advance the arts and sciences. So intellectual property rights are not defined to make the creators wealthy. They're defined, their purpose is so that creators will be encouraged to disclose and diffuse the fruits of their intellectual labor.
So to get information out, actually.
To create information.
Well,
the pharmaceutical industry is one of the toughest situations because it can take tens and twenties and hundreds of millions of dollars to create a new drug. And it's very hard to attract private capital to invest in the generation of a new drug. And then once you have the drug, it's very easy to manufacture. Now, I certainly agree. It's unconscionable to deny sick people drugs. On the other hand, we're not going to have the drugs unless we can give the investors some protection to give them an opportunity to get return for their investment.
Okay, here's the question for both Teresa and Patrick, and then maybe we'll get time for Joe as well. Where do you draw the line in the sand?
Every generation has to redefine these issues. Franklin and Jefferson were inventors. Jefferson created the dumbwaiter, invented the dumbwaiter, for example. There was no way they could possibly anticipate the internet or biotechnology. Right. We have to take the law further, and we have to get involved as citizens and not sit back and let the corporations and the attorneys and the legislatures make all these decisions on their own.
Teresa?
Well, I think on the pharmaceutical companies that's what they would like you to think. That's their line. But really what they do is that they take a product which often has been discovered in the indigenous world, in the rainforest, and then they tweak one tiny and often insignificant thing, tell you that they can't tell you what that thing is that they tweaked because that's a trade secret, and then they put on another intellectual property law. So it's not really the way that they present it, but I think that's really getting it. I've led us down kind of a different path. And on the urban homesteading, I think we all agree that that's something that is such a common good that there's nothing that would be gained in terms of protecting that and preventing other people from using it.
Hey, Joe, what do you have to say?
If Teresa has come up with some sort of a drug pharmaceutical product that can benefit mankind, I'd like to know what it is. But without those protections, we could forget the pesticides. We can forget the plants that have saved millions, if not billions, of people.
And I'm not going to write any more books either. If I can't protect my writing, I'm not going to write any more books. Which is what you're talking about, right, Patrick? Those protections are there to get information out.
Right, to encourage creators. Not so much to reward them, but to encourage them.
It costs,
so that we all benefit.
It costs many, many millions, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars to bring these drugs to market now.
All right, Teresa and Joe, thank you so much for joining us. Really great to hear from you. Patrick Riley, intellectual property attorney for the Intellectual Property Society, IPsociety.net. So go there and check it out and figure out how to protect yourself. This has been The Food Chain. Michael Olson, thank you all so much for tuning in. Stay tuned next week for more What's Eating What Radio on The Food Chain.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.